We celebrate. Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. And I guess if we're being perfectly accurate, I should say good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live on our YouTube channel and all our social media feeds, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. We're here for a good time. I'm not sure that we're here for a long time tonight, given that it's 5 minutes past midnight on now Thursday, the 25th of March. But gentlemen, good to see you both. Ezra, Dave, I am your host, of course, Drew Mindell. Watch as we just watched the Winnipeg Jets dismantle the Vancouver Canucks by a 5-1 margin, sweeping the two-game series. A late goal by Nils Höglander preventing Connor Hellebuyck from getting his second consecutive shutout. But it really was the Andrew Copp show tonight, guys. 4 goals for the Winnipeg Jets winger. First time he's ever had a hat trick. Certainly that means the first time he's ever had a 4-goal game in the NHL and in college hockey as well. So, you know, just I guess we have to start talking about the performance of the Winnipeg Jets number 9 tonight.
Yeah, and I think we also have to talk about Marcella Chartrand winning $100,000.
Congratulations to her.
Save on Foods, you know, score to win contest. But, you know, the funniest thing is I was just checking Natural Stat Trick, and Andrew Copp's Corsi 4 at even strength was 30%, one of the lowest on the Jets. So unbelievable that, you know, and he was out there, guys, with 30 seconds left. Right?
Oh, like, sure. If you got 4, you might as well try and get 5.
I think Marcella made a phone call to Paul Maurice saying, listen, I want that million. I don't want 100,000. I want a million.
Yeah, I think so, Dave. And it was pretty funny because you could see, you know, Appleton and Copp on the bench when they panned to them. You could see that, you know, Appleton was probably telling Copp, you know, why don't you just go for those 5 goals, right? So, I mean, you know, one of those games, another kind of weird game, right? Like, yeah. This game was pretty sleepy for a while there. You know, in the first period, you know, both teams had chances, and Hellebuyck was, you know, definitely not, you know, the better of the two goalies. I would say that Demko was making, you know, the more difficult saves. You know, but looking at this game as a whole, obviously, you know, the second period, boys, where the Jets score 3 unanswered goals, that was the key there. And you know, when you talk about the Canucks, like that third goal that was scored, the Scheifele goal, like, right, you're right. Sorry, that, you know, there were so many goals towards the end of the game. I got confused there. But the Scheifele goal, like, you look at that, Hamonic and Tyler Myers. First off, there's a miscommunication there. Travis Hamonic and Tyler Myers, it was a line change. If you remember, the Dubois line goes off, the Scheifele line comes on. All, like, nobody's pressuring Hamonic and Myers there. They can't get the puck out of their own zone. And if you remember, JT Miller, who's playing center now, he's back, you know, in the zone. So it's not like the Canucks are, you know, in an odd man situation or anything like that. Paul Stastny kind of just picks up the puck, gives it to Blake Wheeler. Blake Wheeler moves in. Nobody covers Mark Scheifele. Like, I don't know what Tyler Myers was doing there. It was just like some of the defensive decisions that the Canucks were making in this game, boys, were really puzzling to me. And even on Copp's fourth goal, like, what is Tyler Myers is much too passive. You know, he kind of just lets Andrew Copp go to the net. Like, it's that goal wasn't that complicated. You know, Mason Appleton just puts the puck on the net. Andrew Copp just goes to, like, Demko gives up a rebound. You know, Myers is kind of just not being hard on the puck. And you know, Copp gets his fourth goal of the game, and it's 5-0. Like, the Canucks, to me, like, you expected much more of a pushback in that third period. And I realize, you know, Jake Virtanen had that breakaway chance. He hits the post. JT Miller hit a crossbar in the third period. But, like, overall, you know, this Canucks team, it just didn't seem at any point in that third period like they were going to cut this deficit and make it a 2-goal game or a 1-goal game. So I just thought, you know, they really kind of hung Demko out to dry there in the kind of later stages of this game. Give the Jets credit, but it's not like the, you know, you look at the possession, like the Canucks controlled the possession for the majority of this game. The Jets really, you know, they took advantage of those two power plays. Kopp gets his two power play goals there, and those weren't beautiful goals. Obviously, you know, one of them was a rebound. And that was really the story of the game. The Jets were just more, you know, opportunistic. And the Canucks just, you know, without Elias Pettersson and without Tanner Pearson, like how many players on this team are really scaring you? Like aside from JT Miller, Brock Besser, you know, I guess you throw Nils Höglander in there as well. But like this Canucks team just, I don't know. They don't look like a confident group to me, boys.
You know, you look at this game, Dave, and, you know, the Canucks, I thought, you know, they came out hot to start. You know, you thought, as you might expect, you know, them trying to get a good push after a disappointing result on Monday. They come out hot to start, and the Jets, I think, got their skating legs sort of by about the six-minute mark of that first period. You know, Connor Hellebuyck had to make a number of nice saves to start the game. And then the Jets finally sort of got into the flow of the game, you know, maybe a quarter of the way through the first period. And the first period ends, and it's a relatively non-consequential first period for either team. It's 0-0 after one. And then it's just a function of the Vancouver Canucks sort of shooting themselves in their own foot. I mean, in the NHL, how do you take too many men penalties? And then, of course, when you're a struggling team like the Canucks are, despite what their record might have been in the last 10 games, forget about that, look at their overall record in the season, what happens on those too many men on the ice penalties? They give up two power play goals. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, when the Jets get penalized for their too many men penalty, three in a game should not happen at the professional ranks, but that's a separate issue entirely. The Jets are able to escape theirs with unscathed, no damage done. But the Jets are opportunistic. That's what they've been all year. The Vancouver Canucks are just a team that is a shell of themselves in terms of any sort of adversity. Once they faced adversity in this game, once it got to be 2-0, I really didn't think that there was going to be much of a contest after that point in time, Dave.
No, and I would suggest that, you know, it was the second period, right? I mean, it was the beginning of the second period. If you look at it, the Connor Hellebuyck kept the Jets in it. They were outshot 7-0 by Vancouver to start the middle frame. And that was pretty much the difference, right? Because you come back into, as his point, you score three goals and you're feeling good now going into the third, you know, the second intermission, being up 3-0. And to me, again, the Jets, I mean, look, you got to give the Jets credit. They after they weathered that storm, they were able to kind of come back. And you know, the Jets got lucky. You know, Blake Wheeler gets that shot off the foot early in the first period. He misses a couple of shifts. You know, Appleton takes a shift in on that first line. Perreault takes a shift in that first line. You don't know what's going to happen. He stays on the bench. Of course, he ends up coming out a few shifts later and playing again. And then Nikolai Ehlers, right after Blake Wheeler, he also takes a shot off the foot. So you're thinking to yourself, this could go badly for the Jets because they've been relatively unscathed this season in terms of injuries. But you know, you have two of your important big dogs hit right in the first period. But again, they stayed in the game. The Jets stayed in it. Demko was good again. And to Ezzie's point, you know, I mean, it wasn't as if the Canucks wilted. They kept it. They played strong, right? But they just didn't have that firepower. And that's what happens when you're missing some of these big weapons, I think. And again, to me, the difference was Connor Hellebuyck was good once again, you know, and, you know, very close to having his second straight shutout, which I think for him would have been the first time for the Jets. But, you know, that second period, that started the second period, Vancouver pushed. And they just couldn't break Connor Hellebuyck. And when Connor Hellebuyck didn't break, gave the Jets that opportunity, which we've seen throughout the course of the season, gave this Jets team an opportunity. What do? They get the power play goals. They get that 2-0 lead. Then, you know, a late third goal in that second period really kind of, to me, that's the game at that point. I don't think the Jets are giving up a three-goal lead at after 40 minutes. So, once they held and once they were able to strike back, I thought the Jets were in cruise control.
No, absolutely. And going, you know, I keep harping on that goal by Scheifele, but like go back. And I actually did, like, I, you know, God bless PVR. I went back and watched it. Like, it's
how does Scheifele get so open? I have to go back and look at it again.
But honestly though, Drew, and it's not just, you know, like Scheifele is just there to kind of, you know, put the garbage goal in. It was Blake Wheeler's work on a nice pass from Stats. Right. But like you go back and look at that goal, like it was a line change. Again, I'm going back here, but like Hamonic and Myers, like the fact that they were somehow able to turn that puck over with zero pressure, and then JT Miller is back, so you have support there, but JT Miller is kind of floating around and he kind of goes towards Stasny, and then nobody picks up Scheifele coming to the net. It was just like to give up that third goal, to Dave's point, in that fashion. That's why really you just didn't have any feeling that the Canucks were going to come back in this game. And I realize, like, since that, you know, 5-2 loss to the Jets, what was that, you know, 2 weeks ago, 2.5 weeks ago, you know, the Canucks had put together 7 wins in 9 games, but like, and I realized there were a few games in there, or at least one win over the Senators there, boys, but like, to me, the Jets just clearly looked like the better team. And again, this is kind of one of those games where the analytics and the eye test don't match up, because if you look at the stats and you look at the possession numbers, it's all in Vancouver's favor. And so you're asking yourself, like, well, why was the score 5-1? Well, you had 2 timely power play goals. You had a couple of goals where the Canucks just completely fell asleep. And again, I don't want to pick on Tyler Myers here. I just thought he was awful tonight. Like, I don't want to pick on him,
but he's stuck.
I think he's the biggest suck who ever sucked, though. Well, I mean, at least on those two goals, on Scheifele's goal and Kopp's fourth goal, I don't know what he was doing, but he was essentially just giving the Jets goals there just by turnovers and poor defensive efforts, right? So, you know, the Jets deserve credit, and we have to talk about this, boys. We now have a 3-way tie for first place in the North Division, right? And, you know, the Leafs and the Oilers, the Leafs play the Senators, I believe, tomorrow night. But then the Leafs and the Oilers are going to face twice before the Jets and the Leafs face each other twice at home. So you're going to have some really good battles coming up here for first place in the North Division. And now the Leafs actually have a game in hand on the Jets, as opposed to the Jets, who had, you know, 3 games in hand on the Leafs a couple of weeks back. So, you know, we're going to have a nice race, and the Jets are, you know, in a great position here to win the division with, you know, less than half of a season left. Like, I realize that, you know, you might say the Leafs have more talent on paper, but why can't the Jets win this division? It's completely wide open.
And, you know, the one thing I'd say, what you had said, Drew, is if the Jets go into Vancouver and beat the Canucks, it's essentially like moving them completely out of contention. I mean, Vancouver's played, what, 4 games more than Winnipeg, and they are now
seven points.
So, and I mean, they're off for a week now, right, Dave? So they have 7 days to think about how poorly they played the last 2 games.
That's right. And so to me, again, that's...
They're going to be thinking about how harsh you are with your comments is really what they're going to be thinking about. Tyler Myers is going to be upset with you there, Mr. Ginsburg.
No, so I think that's a clean thing that we talked about, right? This is a Jets team that hadn't shown a lot of inconsistency in that regard. When you lose, they lose the one, and then they lost those two, and you're thinking, okay, they've lost 2 in regulation. Now they've won those 2 back. They've kind of earned that split. You got a Calgary team that's reeling a bit, right? Look what happens. They've lost 2 straight to the Senators. So that's they can't be feeling very good about themselves.
Why was that game at 3 o'clock in the afternoon today?
Well, I mean, you know, Drew made the point, and
I have not.
Drew, it's not for me to tell your point, but I'm going to anyways.
Like, is there a holiday we're missing?
How do they not flex it when you know that Edmonton and Montreal are not playing? How do you not flex one of these games? There's nobody to consider. There's no fans. So I mean, again, I don't really care because I stay up anyways. I'm a night owl, so it doesn't really bother me. But like, it's insane to not flex either one of the games. Like, I thought at least they'd move that game, you know, a little bit into the evening, or move this one up. But I mean, why they would not? I mean, even half an hour.
But Dave, are you a gray owl or a snowy owl?
Interesting. I'll go with the great horned owl, which I believe is the official owl of the province of Manitoba.
I didn't know the province had an official owl, but this is what we find out when we do a post-game show at 20 minutes after midnight on a now Thursday morning.
The owls are out, boys.
Yeah. As you talked about it when you were talking about this Scheifele goal, and I mean, and you're right, but what stood out to me about it is after Scheifele scores there, if you go back and you look at it, him and Wheeler are laughing. I mean, they're literally laughing, I think, and I don't know if they're laughing about the goal.
Because it was the easiest goal Scheifele's ever scored.
Well, I think they're laughing at their opponent, and I think they're laughing at the Canucks' D-zone coverage there. I mean, I honestly think that's what they're laughing at, is like, you know, Wheeler, you know, has his opportunity there, and Scheifele just comes in and takes the puck and flips it up. And to your point, I think he just, they're laughing at, like, why was I unaccosted? Why was I able to do that? Why was there nobody around me? And when you see, one opponent laughing at another opponent, that's got to be fairly demoralizing for the Vancouver Canucks. And they should be demoralized. I mean, look, they lost 5-1. I mean, officially, the one goal didn't matter because it happened with, 90 seconds to go. So they get absolutely, destroyed in their own zone for the majority of the game. And this is what it was. It was the Jets almost toying with them towards the end of the game there.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we talked about, they've played more games than any other team in the NHL. We talked about, the 7-day break that they have coming up. They were outscored 10-1 in two games against a team that they're trying to catch in the standings at home.
Yeah. This was reminiscent of? Remember the two-game series between the Jets and the Washington Capitals when the Jets were in the Southeast Division? Yeah. And it was a back-to-back. It was a Thursday-Friday or a Friday-Saturday, two in a row. And
that was the lockout year, right?
It might have been the second year the Jets were back. Yeah, I think it was the lockout year. And the Jets, if they won both games, they would have been either in a playoff spot or right next to the Capitals. I don't remember exactly what it was. And I think the Jets got blown out 15-1 combined in those two games. That was somewhat reminiscent of this, where a team that is sort of scrapping and trying, and maybe they think they can be with the big dogs, finally plays one of those big dogs. And that big dog, in this instance, the big dog being the Jets, told the young pup where to go with their ambitions.
No, absolutely. And, we talked about this a couple of nights ago. Like, they're without Elias Pettersson, their most skilled forward, their best player. They're without Tanner Pearson. We're not sure, if Tanner Pearson's going to be signed or if he's possibly going to be moved before the trade deadline. But the point is, those are two players in your top six that are out. And when you're missing those two, and we should mention Brandon Sutter, who's your third line center, right? So you're missing, three players in your top nine. So a guy like Jake Virtanen, and I actually think he's been pretty good. Or at least in these two games against the Jets, he doesn't have any goals.
I thought he just does things. I don't think he does things of any consequence. That's what I tweeted. I mean, he had the breakaway, and that was, fine. He gets credit for a breakaway, and he beats Hellebuck, but he hits the post. But other than that, I just thought he was, going for a skate on the ice, like a casual stroll half the time, where he does things that are inconsequential to the play.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think, Drew, you mentioned, casual stroll. And for me, like that kind of sums up the Canucks. Like I mentioned this last game, this is more eye test, but, they just look like a passive group. Like they're fighting for their playoff lives. Dave mentioned this, 5 to 10 minutes ago, like they're done. Like for them to make the playoffs, they're probably going to have to go on a 6-7-8 game winning streak. Like, does anybody?
It's over, Rock.
It's over. Done. It's done. Yeah. Like, we talked about, like, the Jets, Oilers, and Leafs are tied for first. We know those teams are most likely going to get in, and most people would agree that Montreal is the best bet to get that fourth spot. Like Calgary's still in it, but like they just lost two games to the Senators. So really, I mean, this playoff race might be over in a week or two.
First of all, Calgary, is actually behind Vancouver in the standings. And granted, Calgary has three games in hand on Vancouver, so that probably won't be for long. But Montreal is sitting there at 37 points. Calgary's got 33 points. The Habs have three games in hand on the Flames. And the Habs have six games in hand on the Canucks. I mean, if Calgary is going to make that push for that fourth playoff spot, well, time is a wasting, and you really weren't in a position where you could lose two games in a row to the Ottawa Senators. And not only lose two games in a row, but lose them listlessly. Like, I don't think we can overstate. I mean, Calgary, they had a dead cat bounce a little bit when Sutter got hired. Mm-hmm. But so far, he hasn't done... it's not like he's going to, flip a switch on that team. There seems to be something rotten in Calgary.
They can't score goals, Drew. What do they have? Three goals or four goals in their last three games?
Their goal differential is minus 13.
They have the fewest goals in the North Division. Yeah. And a team with Goudreau and Monahan and a Lindholm and Tkachuk should not have a problem scoring goals. And by the way, if goal scoring is your problem, Daryl Sutter is not the hire to try and generate offense because he barely believes in scoring goals at the best of times.
No, and it goes back to what Dave said about the Canucks here. Like, you know, the Jets have really made it difficult by beating them twice in regulation. It's going to be really difficult, you know, after this week off here for the Canucks to make the playoffs. And it's going to be a similar situation here with the three games in Calgary, guys, right? Like, you mentioned it, Drew, like the Flames are actually behind the Canucks in points with games in hand. But if the Jets are able to defeat the Flames three times in a row, and I think there's a, you know, I mentioned this a couple nights ago, you know, I think it would be tough to expect three wins, but after seeing what the Flames did against the Senators, I don't know how hard it's going to be, you know, for the Jets to beat the Flames. We know they're a better team, and obviously, you know, the Flames are going to be a desperate group because they've lost three games in a row and they're fighting for their playoff lives here. But yeah, I mean, you know, both the Canucks and Flames, you know, have shown to be very flawed teams here. Like, I think Sean Monahan doesn't have any goals in his last six games. I think Tkachuk has one goal in his last 10 games or one goal in his last 11 games. So, you know, Tkachuk, Monahan, these are your top players. You mentioned Johnny Gaudreau, like, you know, he's putting up the points, but, you know, it's just not going to cut it when you're scoring one goal against the bottom team in the North Division, right? So the Jets have a really good chance here. And, you know, we've talked about it. You've got a lot of hockey left. I realize, you know, half the season's already over here, but you have a chance to finish first in the North Division. We know what that means. I mean, that means home ice. And even though, you know, home ice doesn't necessarily mean you're going to have the fans, you still want to finish first in the division. And the Jets have a really good chance here to do that.
Well, you know, when this series against Vancouver started, so after Saturday night's game where everyone was disappointed with the result and everyone was a little apoplectic about how the Jets played in that third period, Paul Maurice came out and you know, and he said, look, we played nine games in a row against playoff teams that are currently in a playoff spot. And they went, you know, would they go 4-4-1 or whatever it was. And he sort of told everyone with his remarks and with not making any lineup changes, he like just, you know, sort of calm down everyone, sort of like, you know, turn down the temperature. And the Jets backed him up by going into Vancouver and doing what they did. Now the Jets have to say, look, I mean, these guys, you know, they say, you know, one game at a time, and they say that we don't look at the standings, and that's bullshit. I mean, everybody knows that these guys do not look at the standings, and they know what's at stake.
Language alert.
Well, we're not on radio. I'm allowed to say, you know, curse words now.
And our kids are sleeping, right?
That's true. I mean, if they're not, then you got a bad parenting alert going on. But you know, whatever it is, you know, they took care of business against Vancouver. Now the Jets really, you know, more or less don't have to worry about the Canucks for the rest of the season. They know that if they do the same to Calgary, or reasonable, or take, you know, 5 out of 6, if not mm-hmm. 6 out of 6, or even 4 out of 6, then they're doing very similar to Calgary and almost putting the Flames so far in the rearview mirror that it's not a worry. And then all of a sudden, when you don't have to worry about what's coming up from behind you, and you can only focus on what's ahead of you or what's right next to you, i.e. other playoff teams, that's a much better feeling to be in, you know, for the last, you know, how many games are left in the season now? 25?
23
games. So that's a lot better of a feeling for the last 23 games. And with the trade deadline approaching, it changes, I think, Kevin Cheveldayoff's approach a little bit, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, and that'll be the interesting, this Calgary series is going to be very interesting to see how they do, because to your points we've all been making, this is a team, I misspoke, they've actually lost 3 in a row, not 2 in a row. They lost the 2-8 to Ottawa, but then they've lost 3 in total overall coming back to Calgary. So again, if you're Calgary, we've said it about Winnipeg, not to the same level, they didn't have that desperation, but we just said that they wanted to have that bounce back after not having a good effort in games and having lost, and they generally do, and we've seen that this season. And a lot of times that's Connor Hellebuyck, but team overall has been able to do some things. But Calgary, I mean, you gotta, again, you fired the coach. Once you fired the coach, you're not, and you just gave him a 3-year deal or a 2-year deal, so you're not firing another coach. You know, yeah. The only thing that's gonna happen is, It's incumbent on those players to do something. And again, this is going to be an extraordinarily interesting series for the Jets, because here's an opportunity, to your point, here's an opportunity to step on Calgary's throats, show that you have that ability to, you know, be a top feeding team, really, and be a team that, I'm not saying you're going to go in there and dummy them, because again, you're playing a team that's desperate, but I think that you're going to have to show that you can go in there. If you take 2 or 3, again, to your point, Drew, I see it being very difficult for the Flames to catch the Jets at that point, because again, these teams, the Jets have shown that they, and again, unless something changes, they've been able to just win one, win a couple, lose yeah. one, then get back on that. So it's really hard for the Jets to really fall off. And with the way they've been playing, it's hard to just foresee it, right? I mean, I was reading an article in The Athletic today. It was Dom Letitian's, I butchered his last name, but he just talked about how the Jets have been like model defying this year. And it's funny, like, it's got to be such a hard year for modeling anyway, simply because it's such a bizarre year where you're seeing things that we've never seen before and we'll never see again. But his article referenced the Jets as one of those teams that's been able to kind of beat the model and really kind of go against what has been shown for this team.
Well, and the Jets have been beating the model for the last 2 years. I mean, you know, whatever you want to say about last season, they were, you know, right close to a playoff spot, you know, last year. So the model, for whatever reason, and I think it has to do with, you know, goaltending largely, the model just doesn't necessarily apply to the Winnipeg Jets, because the great equalizer in everything is two things. One, an excellent power play, which the Jets have, obviously a top 10 power play, two power play goals tonight, you know, all from the second power play unit, Andrew Kopp obviously doing the dirty work in front, and good goaltending. That is the, you know, the great equalizer, the great,
not just good goaltending, Drew, you're right. It is the equalizer, not just good goaltending, the best goaltending in the league, right? And I don't think Hellebuyck has the best goal saved above expectation right now. I think, if I'm not mistaken, that Vasilevsky.
Yeah.
I think Demko's up there as well. Hellebuyck he's still in the top five. Yeah, exactly. After these two games, he might not be Dave, but you're right, Drew. I mean, that is the equalizer. And yes, expected goals are the Jets are, I still think they're in the bottom five in the NHL. And when you look at PDO, which combines shooting percentage and save percentage, they're still bottom five, I believe, or they were a week ago. So, yes, they have the best goaltender or at the very least a top three goaltender in the NHL. And you know, the shooting percentage is relatively high. And, yeah, the power play has been red hot for, what, 8, 9, 10 games now. So, you know, the analytics might say that the Jets, you know, aren't one of the top teams, even though when we had Micah Blake McCurdy on, his model said that the Jets were, I think it was the second best team in the North Division. So if you think about it, that's exactly where they are right now. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, maybe the model sometimes. You know what? It depends on the model that you're asking about, I guess. Jets head coach Paul Maurice is at the podium. Let's bring him into the Illegal Curve post-game show. After that, we'll play an ad, and then we'll finish by wrapping this up before our kids wake up in mere hours.
That looked a lot like Sean Reynolds and Ken Weeb.
Yeah, it looked like Kenny and Rennie.
It was. I pressed the wrong button.
Plus, so I was like, it's Jets versus Oilers. And by the way, while we've got a few seconds, Drew, smash that like button, people. Yeah. What are you doing? Smash that like. You know,
you pumped 12:30.
It's 12:30 at night right now, and we want you smashing that like. We want you hitting the subscribe button and hit the reminder. You know, that way you don't need us sending tweets out to remind you about this stuff. You get the reminders right to your device, so make sure you do all of those things.
And for Richard Dubs, I believe we will be working on Passover.
We will be. Friday night, Friday night, I guess, is a there's a late game. That's not Passover. It's Saturday night with the 9 o'clock start in Calgary after the Satyrs. We will be working the post-game show, of course, on Saturday.
We're not Koufaxing.
It's not Yom Kippur. Wrong, I don't know if we'd be doing it on Yom Kippur.
Exactly. I said we're not Koufaxing.
Right. Well, I'm saying if it was Yom Kippur, we would be Koufaxing. Okay, I think I've screwed it up enough. So we'll try and bring in Jets head coach Paul Maurice, if my little sausage fingers can get the job done. But I'm sure I'll hear from Ezzy about that.
In his development in terms of his offensive production?
That would be the simple answer. I think that he spends trying to develop that part of his game. His talent and his gift is the defensive part of the game. That came comes naturally to an off his hands, picking up pucks along the boards, just worked at it, worked at it. I also think we've talked about this last game that line is for his style of play. He can play with other styles, but because he's so strong defensively, that those guys kind of have a unique game. They can play against the other team's best, or in a different match that was going on tonight, they can be pretty dominant over the last two games.
We'll go next to Paul Friesen from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Andrew has 5 goals, I guess, now in his last 3 games. Before that, 1 goal in 23. I guess you can't really explain that.
No, you know what? That's so true. Like, I do think, you know, that the players talk about that confidence, and sometimes it's the confidence to shoot the puck, right? But it's not like there was decisions for him tonight. It's a rebound in the slot. You know he's going to shoot that puck. But other guys, and I would use maybe an extreme example or a more obvious example would be Nikolaj Ehlers, right? So when he's confident, he's always looking to shoot the puck. And when he's not, his whole game changes. With Andrew, it's I think in parts of this, the 2 power play goals is a bit of a version of it. That line, when it's going, there's more action right around the net, right? When they're doing the right thing. So they find themselves there, and he's willing to go to that front. So I think that line's had an uptick over the last 2 weeks, I would think. They started to get stronger, so more offensive time, more around that, and opportunity. So I with Andrew, it's not – I find him overpassing the puck when he's not scoring. I didn't think he was – I think his line, those guys will score kind of almost by committee, that the line has a big piece to do it. He may not admit that, but tonight anyway, but the line's part of it.
We'll go next to Jamie Thomas from 680 CGOB Jets Radio. Go ahead, Jamie.
Hey, Paul, what does this say about the development for Andrew as a player? You go back even a few years ago, he's centering the fourth line and fighting for ice time, and now here he is with a 4-goal game and double-digit goal season.
A really good place for him, right? Like his, like I said, his skill set and his gift is his defensive reads are really, really strong. So that's the right place to break into a league. And you know, he's very unique in that fourth line first year player that we didn't show any video to because he just didn't make any mistakes. And he's going to be high here. But I think that he's really worked at his offensive game, right? Spent an awful lot of time on the ice handling pucks to pass. I think his relationship with Mark Scheifele's helped that. I think that they spent a lot of time working on those things. So while it may not be the first strength that he has, he's developed it, I think, now into a strength.
Next to Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Paul. I'm interested. I'm sure you faced this during your career, but what's when you've got a deep team like you have that is able to score up and down the lineup? You've talked time and time again about the different lines creating offense in different ways. What's the challenge as a coach in trying to match up against a team not just deep, but is able to bring offense in very drastic styles?
So you just try to find strengths. So it was an unusual little matchup tonight. You noticed that Lowry and Thompson took the big bulk of the defensive zone faceoffs, and then Dubois, who had a hard time face circling Scheifele's long offensive zone draws. Sometimes it's just you're trying to match styles where you can find an advantage. The line's unusual in that sometimes if you can get a 3-hole, which doesn't happen, it's not happened here. I mean, they can be pretty dominant, right? When they're a little bit of the pressure has come off them to check, where they can get out and start thinking about playing in the offensive zone, and it's not purely defense first. Those three guys have spent a big bulk of their time just shutting down, just trying to limit team's players. So they got a little unique look tonight. Mark normally now is Stastny being there, so many, this is face-off driven because we have a lefty and righty and center will take the other team's best in those positions. And then I'm trying to find a place for Dubois' line, who at times have been really, really good. I did was their A game. I thought they were close to a bunch of good things, but they couldn't break it. So The Thompson line is the interesting one. It's kind of started as a 7-8 minute line, and with the 6 minute mark with the goalie out, Scheifele on the right hand draw, I had Lowry come out next, but I had Thompson up. They were coming out with the goalie out because they had just earned it in their last 6 years. They're really going to step forward.
Go next, Murat. Let it go ahead, Murat.
Hi, Paul. Just kind of following up on some of these matchup thoughts. When a line like Kopp and Lowry's and Appleton's line switches the matchup that they're getting, does that change then what defenses that they play in front of? And whether that's something that you're actively doing or not, how does that pairing that they play?
Yeah, so it does. That would be, Murat, that would be the thing that doesn't really change. If the game even or you're ahead, so you have your match against the others 4 minutes, and it's not more difficult. That's you're trying. You want your D, and that's true of even or better. But if you're behind it, then you're starting to think about getting your more offensive defensemen behind your more offensive lines if you can. So. It does change the pairings, but you know what? I liked on each of them. I like the way they move the puck a little bit tonight. I think, you know, Pionk's been doing that more as he does that, but the Logan Stanley moves the puck pretty well and has the ability to get pucks to that. So I don't feel that if we got into a Scheifele kind of Stanley DeMello grouping, I wouldn't be afraid of that. Wouldn't bother me.
We'll go next to Paul Friesen from the Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Paul, the scoreboard says 9-1 here these last two games. Where's your team's game at right now?
You know what? That stat is a little bit like our record against Vancouver. And I saw it on the boards here going into last night's game, something like 18-3 or 17-3. And I would never have thought that. And I felt that about these two games. So it's good. You know, there were big chunks of the game again that we liked them a lot, but you know, no one's asked a Connor Hellebuyck question here tonight, and that was some ridiculous goaltending. So I feel that way about over the last 3 or 4 years. I've never felt comfortable going into them. I think they worked through a ton of chances to score, and they're hitting the outside of posts, and we're hitting the inside of posts. I mean, it's been a longer run than that. We've probably been a little than giving team credit for, because that we're probably 19-3 or something like that now, and that's never been the way it felt against Vancouver, but for whatever reason, you know, you get there, and I guess we've been pretty.
And final question to Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Paul. Logan Stanley talked about his first fight. Sounded like he enjoyed it. He was hoping that he gave the team a little bit of a boost. Did you see that? And seeing a man throw them the way he did, what does that have you thinking about his potential to affect games in the future?
We're just still learning about Logan. His game is right for a first-year defenseman. He's been really solid for us. That element will eventually come to pretty much every defenseman, certainly the bigger men. Net front, the battles net front will usually incite something like that. The willingness to do it, doesn't have to be his calling card. But the willingness to do it is important. A little bit of a confidence builder for him in that he's a kind of a player favorite right now because he moves the puck and he gets it to the net, and the forwards really like that. Having that physicality in his game changes the way our back end looks.
Thanks very much, Coach.
Okay.
Keeping Winnipeg laughing for over 30 years. Rumors, Canada's longest-running comedy club. Bringing you the biggest laughs from the best comedians on the planet. Jerry Seinfeld, Chris Rock, Jon Stewart, Dennis Miller, Brad Garrett, the greats, and all the up-and-comers too. When was the last time you laughed out loud? Make it a great night out with friends, or book your office or birthday party. Even a fundraising event at Rumors. Get all the details and dates on upcoming shows at rumorscomedyclub.com.
Hey, Drew. Ezzy, whoa, what a smile.
Yeah, I got my crowns done at Linden Market Dental Center, and they whiten my teeth.
I see.
They're so bright that every time I smile, they go...
We have hockey tonight. Do you have a mouth guard to protect those pearly whites?
I sure do.
Whoa, they even ting through the mouth guard.
Linden Market Dental Center covers all your dental needs, from restorative to cosmetic dentistry, and will fit you with a sports guard for that active lifestyle. 877 Waverly, see lindenmarketdental.com.
Hi, it's Drew from Illegal Curve here. Selling your home can be stressful, but it wasn't for me. Thanks to my friends at Zappia Group Realty, they made the process so easy. My home sold within 48 hours and with multiple offers. Zappia Group Realty took care of everything with their exquisite customer service and attention to detail. If you want to sell your home for more in less time, get started by talking to Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty. Online at zappiagroup.com.
While you can't always count on your team winning, nor your favorite player scoring, one thing you can always count on is Bernstein's Deli. They've expanded their services because the team at Bernstein's Deli wants to accommodate your needs and keep you safe. Open Tuesday to Saturday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. to serve you. Head to your phone, in-store or online to shop for groceries or order meals from the restaurant, like the legendary Illegal Curve Sandwich. Just go to bernsteinsdeli.com.
So you're a pizza person, you married a wing person, but somehow your kids are salad people. You can't pick your fam, but you can pick your BP meal deal, starting from $18.99 for takeout or delivery at bostonpizza.com.
We're back on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Illegal Curve post-game show, I should say. 12:45 in the morning, Thursday the 25th of March. Nice to see so many of you sticking with us for the post-game show. We do appreciate that. While you're here, smash the subscribe button. Make sure that you hit the reminder. Do that. That way you get alerted each and every time we go live here with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show or the Illegal Curve post-game show. Quick reminder, of course, after us, our friends, Kenny and Rennie, they're going to keep the post-game show talk going. Surf on over to their YouTube channel. Join them. Rumor has it that at 1 o'clock, Ken Weeb takes off his shirt. So I don't know what's going to if that's actually going to happen today or not. But, you know, who knows what's going to happen when the show gets to the 1 a.m. hour. Final thoughts from Dave and Ezzy. Quickly, guys, because really, our kids are going to be up very, very soon.
Well, it's 12:45 in the morning, and Sasha Rosen is asking us to maybe do a top five Jewish players of all time. I would have to think Zach Hyman is in there, and I would have to think Matthew Schneider is in there. I would throw Ronnie Stern in there. Valerie Kamensky, I believe, is Jewish, and Evgeny Malkin, I think, is half Jewish, so I'd throw those two in there as well.
I think so.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure about your research there, big boy.
Zach Hyman for sure.
We watched one tonight. Quinn Hughes.
Quinn Hughes, Jack Hughes, Nate Thompson. Come on.
There's a couple.
There's enough Jews that you don't have to start making up people or start assigning Judaism to other people. So that's your final
thought.
There's
a Jewish connection with Evgeny Malkin. I think you should look into that. But
Final thought. We're done with you now. Dave, your final thought.
No, I think the Jets did what they needed to do. I mean, you have Connor Hellebuyck. It's funny how Paul Maurice said in his availability, how nobody even asked about Connor Hellebuyck. I think that's just kind of become what we've come to expect from Connor Hellebuyck, right? He just goes out and has a performance like that. And again, if he doesn't have that second period, the start of that second period where the Jets are outshot 7-0, the composition of this game or the way this game looks could have been significantly different. So to me, Connor Hellebuyck is the story again. Late, you know, gives up the shutout late in the game, but really, almost back-to-back shutouts for him. And I wasn't surprised that he went with Connor Hellebuyck tonight, but we had talked about it previously. We weren't sure if that was that was really the only question mark really for me. And we're seeing how the Jets are managing their time really with this schedule, right? We knew they really only have 2 days of practice in like 6 weeks or 8 weeks or something like that. But even the days where they could get into practice, like a day like yesterday, they chose to take it off and give the players that time to rest and recover. So it seems like they're managing the team well. And again, we're going to go watch what this team is able to do in Calgary. And if they can keep this up, especially against a Calgary team that's just not firing on all cylinders, if you can go in there, especially if you can take that first game. And all players have talked about how important these first games are. And if you can go in, you take that first game, you know, again, you're not guaranteeing yourself a playoff spot. You're not guaranteeing you're going to be a first place team. But I think you've really positioned yourself to be at least a playoff team if you can go in and do what you need to do against Calgary Flames.
And that is the final thought for tonight's post-game show. A reminder, of course, on Friday night, we'll be back with the post-game show after the Jets and the Flames. Saturday morning, 9 a.m., the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. And then Saturday night, the post-game show again after the Jets and the Flames.
Get your matzah ready, boys.
There you go. Get your matzah ready. Want to give a shout out to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and of course, Boston Pizza. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. For Ezra Ginsberg, for Dave Minuk, I am your host, Drew Mandel. Thanks for watching. This has been the Illegal Curve Post Game Show.